Thank you for the introduction. It's a pleasure to be here again. So this talk, as you see, I put some introduction as a matter of title that I'm going to discuss, and it's divided in two parts. First part, it's a review of a theory which is rather old but quite powerful and interesting, is the theory of chevalier groups, and subsequent taken up by Tietz, who developed geometrically this theory of chevalier groups. And so then the second part, in fact, Tietz was able, as first person, to define, give a definition of a chevalier group over F1, the field with one element that nobody yet understands completely, and neither we have a definition. But Tietz, with a very geometric and beautiful way, was able to give a suitable sense of a notion of limit of geometries constructed from a finite field as Q when the Q tends to 1. Then there is a second part, in which by the way, is a work in collaboration with Alain Cohn. In the second part, we took up a later development of this theory. People after Tietz, there was a sort of long period when the theory of F1 didn't come up again. And then this idea about F1 was taken up again by several people. I hope to have a precise chronological indication of which one was the first, but as far as I remember and read, there is a paper by Yuri Manin on lectures, in fact, at Columbia University, in which he develops this theory of F1 in relation, especially in relation with the theory of zeta functions and motives, what he called absolute motive over F1. And later on, then a few people, one of which is present in this room, is Christophe Soulet, brought up again this theory, developed this theory, especially for affine varieties over F1, and trying to have a notion which is compatible with the description of a zeta function for this algebraic variety over F1. So we read the paper of Christophe Soulet, and we decide to generalize a little is definition of algebraic variety, affine algebraic varieties over F1, what originally he wrote as he called truc from French. And so then we had now a version which is a little bit more general version, graded version of the definition, of the original definition that Soulet gave in his paper a few years ago. So this is the second part in which I will try to describe what we have done and the definition of this graded gadget and the fine variety of F1 and the notion of, in particular, of chevalier schemes as a graded gadget over F1 and the corresponding zeta function. Okay, so now I have to remember to push the box before to cut and do it like that. So I hope that now, Okay, so here is the beginning. Chronologically, my talk starts in the middle 50, 1955, when Claude Chevalier introduced a notion of chevalier group. And then 1 year later, Tietz reconsidered this notion, and he defined a geometry associated with these chevalier groups. It's a beautiful paper, the paper of Tietz, and it's rather difficult to find because it was a paper out of a talk he gave, apparently, and so it just one has to look carefully in the libraries to have a copy. But fortunately, we had one we looked through, and then it's there, the definition of these chevalier groups over F1 I want to talk about. So here we are, middle of 1955, a beautiful time, as a matter of people working in algebraic geometry and groups. So that was the era when Chevalier had his Seminaire de Géométrie Algébrique, and then at the same time there was this idea to classify all possible simple groups. finite simple groups. So the story with finite simple groups is rather old. It started much earlier in the, with Jordan and then Dixon and then Dieudonné, who took up this this theory and developed interesting results. But these are partial, and the construction is ad hoc construction. So they are not. There is not a systematic. There was no systematic way to understand, to give a classification. And so then there came Chevalier with this great paper in Tohoku. My journal is a thick paper and extremely nicely written, in which he gives essentially algebraic structural theorem for classifying semi-simple complex Lie Lie groups, and he transfers simultaneously this definition over any field K. So starting with the classical theory, simple complex Lie groups, as I remember, there are of two types, classicals and exceptional. And he was able to give a definition for any field. And then what is the main tool in this construction? The main tool is the definition of an integral model for the Lie algebra, the complex Lie algebra. So it's a kind of integral version of the structural theorem, and I'd like to go a little bit through this part, although it's rather technical. Okay, so one starts with a complex semi-simple Lie algebra and the root set. Then one considers a Cartan algebra, and roots are interpreted as linear map from H to C. And let's see if I can be systematic. And then associated to each root, there is a root element, an element in the algebra H, which satisfies this relation with respect to the Lie bracket. So the theorem Chevalier is here, and it says, okay, if I choose R and S, two roots, such that their sum is still a root, these root elements, or corresponding root element associated to these three roots, can be chosen such that they satisfy these properties. In particular, you see here coefficients NRS, which Chevalier was able to prove that was not, that it was an integer number, precise integer. Here I didn't write the precise description, but there is a precise description. So G, this algebra G, has an integral basis, which is made by the root element and the co-weights, which are associated to each root. The co-weights are the elements in the Cartan algebra which satisfy this condition. He proved in the paper that the structure of the integral version of this, so this is a kind of model, integral model of the algebra, which was a complex algebra. So the structure of GZ as a Lie algebra depends only on the algebra, on the Lie algebra itself. It doesn't depend on the choice of the Cartan subalgebra, neither on the choices of the roots element. So then what one does is one chooses a basis for this algebra. Here is a basis made by the co-roots, certain number L, which is going to be the rank of the algebra, and then the roots element. And then the final gives a definition of the algebra over K, K being any field, as the tensor product of Z with G. And similarly, there is a definition for the algebra, Cartan algebra over K, by tensoring this group, which is generated by the co-weights. And so here there are some notation with the note by this star, Ni star, the co-roots, which is one tensor, Ni, etc. Similarly, for the description of GK, now it's a direct sum of the corresponding Cartan over K, algebra over K, and the other part, the complementary part. Now, what I have put into boxes here are the important part of this theory. One is the definition of a lattice out of the root. So there is a lattice which is made, out of this root system. The important part of this construction is the lattice the rank of the lattice is the rank of the algebra, L. And then there are certain groups, subgroups of the group of automorphism of the algebra GK, which now comes up in the definition of the Chevalier group. One of which is this group here, which is the toric part. So it's isomorphic to the set of homomorphism from L to K star, and this isomorphism is described by sending a character to H chi, where H chi is an automorphism of GK, which leaves fixed the co-weights and multiply by a certain number, chi r, the roots element, so to say. Now, for every root, there is a map, homomorphism, from SL to K, to the group of automorphism of GK, which is defined this way. The diagonal matrices are mapped to the elements H, K, the one that we have there. Here. Then there are these elements, which are described by the images of the lower diagonal or upper triangular, lower triangular or upper triangular matrices. And then finally, there is this element omega r for every r, which is the image of the diagonal, the 2x2 matrix, which is with 0 on the main diagonal and 1 and minus 1 on the second diagonal. Here is the second important subgroup of the group of automorphisms which enter in the definition of the Chevalier group. It's the group for every R, is the group, one parameter group generated by the element over here, which are the images of the upper triangular matrices. The definition, the original definition of Chevalier group is that GK is defined as the group generated by H, this H here, the toric part, and the XR as R, so these elements as R varies in the set of the roots. There is it's important to, this is the original definition, and people also describe some groups which are very frequently called Chevalier groups, which in fact is described by only this part here, but I prefer to stick with the original definition, which is here. So now we started with a root system, a root set, and in fact it's more appropriate to consider a set of fundamental or certain time called simple roots. So these are roots using which every other root can be written as a sum with coefficients which are all non-negative or all non-positive, depending because the set of the roots, I mean this, the space of the roots are so the Euclidean space of the roots can be there is an order on that space, and so using that order one can map to a definition of the fundamental simple roots. And here they are L in number, as L is the rank of the algebra. And Chevalier, this is the result of Chevalier, this is the definition of the Chevalier group, but Chevalier was able to show that in fact the Chevalier group is also described, generated by the toric part, and that by the system XR of XA at this point, because one sticks to the fundamental root plus or minus A. So when A varies in the set of fundamental roots, and this is enough to describe GK, although the original definition is here. So then this theory can be reinterpreted more in a sort of more systematic way, and this was done by people like Coxeter. I should bring up his name several times in this talk. And the piece, and then they start up this idea of working with systematically with the abstract root system. So what is an abstract root system? It's made by a lattice, L, which is called by this group of weights. And then there is phi, the finite set of roots. And then there are this linear transformation, nr, from L to Z, which are called the R coroots, if R is an element in phi. So now here we, you see, before this nr were element in A there, in the first in H. Here they are interpreted as linear map, and the reason is that there is a killing form, and using the non-degeneracy of the killing form, one can exchange the role of R interpreter, the root interpreted as a linear map, or the coroot interpreted as a linear map, because associated to each root there is a corresponding coroot, and then the killing form is non-degenerate on the semi-simple Lie algebra, and so we have the possibility to exchange the role in some sense of root coroot. So the first root system has to satisfy four axioms, which you can read here. And then attached to each S, attached to each root, there is a reflection. The reflection with respect to S, which is given by an automorphism of L, described in this way. So this is the beginning of the definition of the wide group, or also called in these terms Cox group. Okay, so the theorem, important theorem in this theory, dense theory, is the theorem which is viewed originally by Chevalier and then reconsidered by Grothendieck and de Mazur in ESGA volumes, saying that if one starts with this an abstract root system attached to it, there is a reductive group scheme over Z, G, such that the points, the rational points over K, they coincide with the Chevalier group, originated by Chevalier over K. So it's a way to understand from the point of view working with algebraic groups and the theory which was developed by Chevalier and de Mazur and Grothendieck. It's a way to interpret, to have a model over Z, algebraic model, algebraic variety, over Z, such that the points over K, the rational points over K, get identified with the group we start. Okay, and interpret this way, one talk about usually maximal split torus. So there is a maximal split torus inside this algebraic group scheme, such that the rational points over K of this torus coincide with the H that we have seen before as one of the generators, the toric part which enter in the description of the Chevalier group. And then there is the normalizer of the torus in G. Okay, so then here there is the description of the Coxeter Y group. The Coxeter group is attached, it's a more general, it's attached to any matrix which in fact Coxeter defined a priori, starting with this abstract root system. So a Coxeter matrix is a symmetric matrix which has one on the main diagonal, and so out of it there is a definition of Coxeter group, which is given here. So it's the set generated, it's the group generated by the roots, the simple roots, satisfying this relation where MI are in fact the entry of the matrix, RI, RJ to MIJ equal 1. And there is an isomorphism because attached to each RI there is a corresponding reflection, and so you can imagine an isomorphism from the Coxeter group to this group, the group generated by reflection. So the Coxeter Y group is the group generated by reflection, which has also happened to be the quotient of the normalizer of the torus, modulo the torus. And the definition, by the way, of the MIJ is written here. It's a little bit technical. So two times MIJ is the cardinality of the set of roots, which can be written as a linear combination with coefficients in Z of two roots, RI and RJ, simple roots. Now here is the corresponding description of the unipotent groups that we saw before as XR and X minus R. So it's given now here in terms, because now I reinterpret the whole theory using this definition of reductive root scheme over Z. So there is a subset of G which is described by the XR, generated by the XR as R varies in the set of simple roots, and this is in fact it's the image of little XR from be assigned group GA to G. And then there is a corresponding another second group, which is UW, which depends on the choice of W is an element in the Lyle group. So CW, first of all, CW is the set of positive roots such that when you apply a reflection, an element in the Lyle group, then they are positive first and becomes negative later. So using the notion of positive, negative that I said before. So in the Euclidean space of roots, there is a total order that one can put. And there is a meaning of saying C plus and C minus. And one of the major theorems of Chevalet says that if K is any field, then the set of, then if you look at the elements which are rational over K for the algebraic group scheme, then there is a description which is a disjoint union of these groups, so the set of K rational points in the U, in the toric part, and the UW. But here there is a little technical point which is made by, this is a coproduct as W varies in the elements of the bigroup. NWs are choice of representatives for the elements that eventually will map to, will become W when mapped from, when used a map, a canonical projection from the normal NK to the bigroup. And so NWs are the choice of representatives for these classes, the class of W. But the important point is that this theorem holds only when K is a field, for any field, and only for K is a field. And it's a beautiful theorem because it gives you a disjoint, the composition, it's a set sort of way to understand geometrically this story.
Oh.
Originally, yes. In the paper, if I remember correctly, the paper in 55 is for a joint group, so then the theory was generalized for any representation. Okay, so here now is the point where when Pitts read the paper in less than 1 year, in fact, he realized we wanted to describe geometrically this construction, a way to interpret geometrically this algebraic construction of the Chevalet groups. So to do that, then the starting point is we have a Chevalet group scheme over Z, a collection of simple roots. And then you want to describe a geometry. So for a pizza, geometry is made by families, finite number of families, and then certain incidence relations among elements of the families, and a group of automorphism which acts on the family. You can describe this idea also working with groups, and so this is what Pitts did. So he start up by considering the groups. So you see here this script AI, it's the sum when for all possible, sorry, it's made by roots in phi, which are described as a linear combination of simple roots, all but the number I, so to say. So you take away one of them systematically, and so you make I running from 1 to L. And then for each AI, you have a definition of a group, which is a subgroup of G, this GK, which is the group generated by the UK, H, the toric part, and the X minus R, so the unipotent part, when R is an element in AI. And you have L of them. So you have L possible GI, because this set is made by L roots. So this for Pitts will be a geometry of index L. So we call a geometry of index L if one has a family, in cardinality, family, each of which is associated to one of the GI, because you would consider the geometries which are live fixed by this automorph, by the element of GJI. More precisely, Titz goes further and he says, if I have a Chevalier group scheme, say, over K, then I have more than a family attached to it, but I have a what he called complete system of geometries, meaning the following, that you can consider geometry which are done by reducing a given one modulo an element in a family, in a corresponding family. So very, very shortly, because the paper is rather technical at some point and was not the point of my talk here, is that he considers this collection of geometry associated to this Chevalier group scheme, and in particular to rational points over K. And in fact, he also attached, in a way which is very, because the word scheme at that time was not yet invented, so we are in 1955, scheme a little bit later, Grotinger came up with the definition of scheme, but already, there was this, I'm guessing what was at the time, I was not there, but I'm guessing that in this Chevalier seminar, things went very well on, and then Titz realized that one could attach what nowadays is called Titz Witt-Dinking diagram, but at the time Titz called the Witt-Dinking diagram a scheme. So this, I guess, was the first time one can see the word scheme implemented in a paper, and a few years later, of course, Grothendieck, worked out all the details in very technical way. So here, scheme refers, in fact, to the Witt-Dinking diagram. So what Titz called scheme is not talking about a diagram, which is already associated, is there, it's universal, by the way. It's something that, starting with the complex Lie algebra, one has already. So it's out of the Witt-Dinking diagram, it's something universal one has out of Lie algebra and the root system, and then one works with the geometry of the root system to understand the type of the diagram. And Titz at that point realized that the important information that one has by looking at this Witt-Dinking diagram, that maybe I'll put on the board just to recall, here are the Witt-Dinking diagram. So one has really the important information that this diagram, this universal diagram, gives us is not really done by looking at the numbering that we might see very frequently attached one to, for example, this is the Witt-Dinking diagram of AN, the projective spaces. And usually people put 1, 2, 3, up to n plus 1. So this is not important information, says Titz, because if you can sort of dualize the thing, if you could call n at this point and n minus 1 that, because there is a duality going on. The important information that has to be understood is given by these links, these edges, so to say. And you see that if one looks through the diagrams, one sees four possibilities. There are either there are no edges, or there is a single edge, or there are two edges here, or you have three edges in this case. So the edges are expressed by, are defined, so you have 0, 1, 2, and 3 as possibility for the number of edges. And technically speaking, the edges are described by certain trigonometric relations, because you work, you consider two roots, Ri and Rj, and then you say, I think, 4 times cosine square of theta ij equal this n, where n is 0, 1, 2, 3. So this is the technical definition to say I have one edge or have zero edge. It depends on the angle, in fact, between two roots, two consecutive roots. But it reinterprets this information geometrically. So, like, say, when a geometry, you can have geometry which is reducible, reduced modulo, an element in the family. So it's I should spend more time on that, but the output of the intuition that he had is written in this statement here. So there are four elementary types of geometries. All the other geometries are combination of these four elementary types. And these are geometries over K, which are characterized by those corresponding to A1 cross A1, where you don't have any link, A2, the projective case, projective space of dimension 2, with one link, B2 with two links, and then G2 with three links. So you want to say all the rest, all the remaining geometry are composition of this four fundamental type. And as I said before, this is a universal property, which is independent of the field. So one seeks for information at this point in order to arrive to F1, which is independent of the field, and one quickly realized that in the Vi group, in the Coxeter group, in the Chevalier groups, the important information is given by the Vi group and the root system and how the Vi group acts on the Euclidean space. So here is the part back to the work of Chevalier. The groups over FQ, in particular when K is a finite field with Q elements, Q being a power of a prime, and so one has one wants to consider the cardinality of the number of the cardinality of the points through this group over K. And the theorem that I wrote before, the theorem of Chevalier, which says for any field, the GK decomposes in this joint union of these cells. It's reinterpreted here in terms of cardinality. And so you have that it's the product of the cardinality of the unipotent parts, and then here there is a sum over the vile, the elements of the vile group, and the toric part. So you see here that, after all, to understand the number of points of G over K, it's enough to know, because this U are essentially nothing but affine spaces of some dimension N, and here is the cardinality of the set of positive roots. Then there is the toric part, so there is a GMK raised to L, because the torus has rank equals L, equal to the rank of the algebra. And here is the sum with another affine space, the rational points for another affine space. Okay, so if K is equal FQ, then the formula is as follows. There is a simplification now which goes on, which is rather interesting because, so this is a result which is due to Raoult, who studied this sum, so when you sort of this sum here, when you sum over the elements of the Vi group, and realize by topological methods, in fact, realize that this sum can be written as a product for I equal 1 to L of Q, so these polynomials, Q to the di minus 1. Here is another important information, actually, the fundamental information about this Chevalier groups, which are certain integer, positive, non-negative integer, called the exponent of the Vi group. So they arise as looking at the average representation of the Vi group into the Euclidean space spanned by the roots. And so they are in L, they are L non-negative integers. And using that, I mean, here you see the sum splits this way. And notice that there is a Q minus 1 at the denominator, so when you make the product of for 1 equal 1 to L, you have a Q minus 1 raised to the L, which erases, so to say, cancel, with the Q minus 1 raised to the L, which is muted due to the toric part in the description of the Chevalier group, to the point of the Chevalier group. And by the way, so I say this here right away, this is this group, the presence of this story part, it's the fundamental of the result that when one looks at the zeta function over F1 of this gadget, then we have a function which is rational and not polynomial. because it would have been polynomial if we had this description and this description, but this q minus 1 to the L just makes things a little bit more complicated. So anyway, if we just do this cancellation quickly, and then we realize the cardinality of the elements, so the number of points over Fq is given by this formula. And Titz now understood that it would be quite interesting to define a polynomial associated to this product, to the product which we saw in the over there, the numerator of this here. And then he has this collection of integers of the exponent of the Weyl group, which is associated. So this notation refers to the fact that this is a polynomial attached to the geometry associated to this Chevalier group. This G refers, in fact, to the corresponding complex Lie algebra. But, okay. So this is completely determined, this polynomial, by the action of the Weyl group on L, in fact, on L tensor C. And there is, so attached to this idea of, attached to this Chevalier group, there is then the Chevalier, the Titz geometry, associate geometry. And in fact, Titz realized that, so this geometry, as I said at the beginning, is made by a certain number of families, in this case L. Here is an incidence relation, and here is the group of automorphisms, which in fact coincide nicely. This was one of the goals of Titz, being able to say that this geometry have a group of automorphisms which is isomorphic to the Chevalier group that Chevalier originally defined. So this is the geometric reinterpretation you see here of the Chevalier groups originally defined algebraically, now understood as a group of automorphisms of a given geometry. And what Titz realizes is that the cardinality of a family, Fi, is in fact made by a polynomial. It's evaluated at Q, which has the property, and here is the main point, which has the property that Q minus 1 does not divide the polynomial. Now, why we are so happy to see, I'm so happy to see this, because eventually what Titz did was to make Q tending to 1 and understand this geometry. And saying that this geometry, when Q tends to 1, have a meaning because each of these family have a cardinality which is a number, so because Q minus 1 is not a factor on this polynomial. So now here is the definition finally of Chevalier group over F1 for Chevalier. Is what he did, in fact. He took this QGI, because there is a polynomial attached to each family Fi, and he evaluates this polynomial at 1, because there is a meaning, I mean, you can do that. And found that this is an integer, non-negative integer. So Titz reinterpreted this number as the number of elements of the family, which I call Fi star, because I don't know, this Fi star is the sort of degenerating family. What remains of the family Fi when Q tends to 1? And the structure simplifies enormously, because now we are in what Titz denoted by the field of characteristic 1. So he said the field of characteristic 1, it's a set made, when 1 equal to 0, so it's algebraically is too trivial to consider this way. But geometrically, you see there are geometries that they have a meaning when Q tends to 1. The understanding of his idea is that although algebraically we don't follow, but geometrically we are able to say that if we start with a geometry defined over Fq, then there is a precise meaning of taking the limit as Q tends to 1 for the geometry. The geometry reveals us something. The algebra simplifies too much. And in fact, he said this is a compositum, because we have to remember that he claimed earlier on there are four fundamental types of geometry associated to the Dedekind diagram. So these limit geometry are the composite of the limit version of the four elementary geometries. And in fact, it was able to show that that they are geometry associated to polygons with 2, 3, 4, and 6 sides for a definition of a geometry of n polygon for the associate to n polygon, which is now I will skip a little. So here is Tietz, the end of the story from him. So that now we have a geometry over F1, and our starting point is the following. Now is the second part of the talk. So Tietz's construction produced a notion of geometry over F1 as a limiting of a certain geometry, well-defined, so that we have this universal geometry which degenerates, but they are still there. They are polygons of 2, 3, 4, and 6 sides associated to a Chevalier group scheme over Z. Or the example, just to just to bring up the easiest one, is the case of type AL. So the first one, the projective spaces. So here G is the projective linear group, PGL plus 1, C. And here we have the Vi group. Now it's for this geometry, the Vi group becomes the group of automorphism associated to this limiting geometry. And it coincides with the symmetric group with L plus 1 element of rank index L plus 1. And this limiting geometry, it's a finite set made by L plus 1 points where one considers as a linear subvarieties the set of I plus 1 points in it. So when I say it's very basic, the only information that remains from the fact of taking the limit algebraically when Q tends to 1, it's to get a collection, a set, a finite set of certain cardinality. And so the geometry, which before were linear subspaces of certain dimension, now becomes simply subset of some cardinality I plus 1, say. So the question that when, in view of the development of this theory of F1, in the sense that people wish to have now a notion, for at least for some geometry, a notion of which is more similar to the one we are used to, like affine algebraic varieties or projective algebraic varieties. So the question is, can we understand these group schemes over Z? Can this be obtained by this change from a variety G defined over F1 in this sense, although we don't know what this is? And so the goal is the definition, in fact, of a variety, of a definition, suitable definition of variety over F1, which is compatible at least with the point of view of Tietz, of the geometry, that the limiting geometry that he considered. And here is the definition of what is for us a gadget, so over F1. As I said, the original definition is due to Christophe Soule, and he called this, he didn't consider the graduation, if I understand his paper correctly. He defined a notion of truth over F1, and we took up his viewpoint and generalized a little, and also introduced a graduation in it. So a graded gadget, or a gadget, depending which way, it's given by a covariant font. So we work with the category of finite, although it's not necessary here, abelian groups, two sets. It's a covariant font. And here the second part of the definition. So it's given by this covariant font, eventually a graded covariant font, an algebraic variety over C. At this point, Soule had the introduction of an algebra over C. And here it's a natural transformation which replaced in the original definition of Soule the notion of evaluation of the algebra at each point. And so it's given by a natural transformation. Now it's more general, it's generalized, taking connecting this covariant font to this covariant font from home, from spec C, and then here is from abelian to set. So a morphing of gadget, notice that I haven't said here graded gadget, a morphing of gadget is a natural transformation, and together with the morphic, classical, interpreting the classical sense of algebraic variety over C, such that because we have a natural transformation, there is a commutativity of this type. So now I put some example. In fact, there is a refined version of morphism, which is that of immersion of gadget, for immersion, one talk about an injective functor and the CC, so the corresponding morphism for the algebraic variety over C is an embedding. So the main example of a gadget is the one which we have as a consequence of working with algebraic variety over a fine algebraic variety over Z. So spec A, where A is a Z algebra, define a gadget in sort of as a restriction, because then one would consider as a gadget the corresponding functor from which describe the points home from A to ZB. And then the corresponding complex variety is the one naturally one thinks of, so the tensor product. And the natural transformation, so the evaluation, the method to evaluation, is given by the fact that there is a natural map from here to here by applying the contravariancy of the spec as a functor. More in detail, so there are very few at the moment algebraic variety over F1 that has been introduced. And here it was the definition of gadget, in fact. So now the next step is to define an affine variety over F1, so which is more refined than the notion of gadget. In fact, an affine variety over F1 is a finite graded gadget, so it must be graded. And it must take, it's finite in the sense that it takes into finite sets, and such that there exists an affine variety over Z. This affine variety over Z immediately describe, give us a gadget, which is this GZ. And so the requirement is that there exists an embedding of X as a gadget into the gadget obtained by restricting XZ. Such that, this is the best possible in some sense of choice. So for every other affine variety of Z and for every morphism of gadget that we have out of it, there exists a unique amorphism of affine variety of Z which can be described in terms of this composite. Well, I think the best is to start. What? No. It's graded, so it's a functor, graded functor. So now you see in the case of affine spaces, GM, what are these? Next, give me one further chunk size. And so then. So the guiding principle that we want is that we should define a graduation of the functor, so this functor ought to contain enough points so that together with XC characterize completely X as a fine variety. And moreover, we want to have a definition which is can be sort of made arithmetic in the sense that we expect that there is a polynomial function. Here I wrote function, but in fact, in this case, it's polynomial. N, which computes the cardinality of the points of this functor over, what is F1 to the N. Here is an extension that the idea of which this idea of extension made by roots of unit. It's due to, I think, Kapranov, in an unpublished paper of Kapranov and Smirnov, they thought that, in fact, as it happened for every extension, for instance, of finite field, one might introduce roots of unit and over the base and consider extension of degree n, and this is the corresponding extension of f1 when one had n roots of unit. Anyway, this function, this polynomial function, should be expanded in Taylor at q equal 1. And you see that the definition of this kth part of the graded functor must coincide with the entry in the Taylor expansion ak times q minus 1 to the k, when q minus 1 equals the cardinality of D, D being a group, finite group. So the example that I will consider in the next few minutes are this one. Well, because we know the description of this polynomial function for GM, the affine spaces, the Chevalier group, so this is why I introduced before, recall before the description of the cardinality of Chevalier group of the RFQ. And finally, this is a case that has not been handled completely, only as a matter of graded the functor. There is not yet a definition we have for the projective spaces. Anyway, it's known that there is a formula, polynomial, which computes the cardinality of the number of points in various extensions, here only for FQ I wrote, and they are given in such a way. So I'm a little bit behind my schedule. For the multiplicative group, we have a polynomial q minus 1 expansion, 0 at q equal 1. So the expansion is 0 plus q minus 1, q is a power of prime. So the corresponding functor is made by a graded, the corresponding gadget is made by a graded functor from a finite abelian group to set. And here is the definition. You see we have a 0, so it's empty. B is a fine, any finite group. So it's empty if k is an integer non-negative except 1. In this case, so k equal 1 is D. And in particular, for the case f1 n, then we have empty here, and Z mod nZ when k equal 1. I will skip, if you don't mind, this part, which is simply it's easy. What is the description of the evaluation and what would be the corresponding algebraic variety over Z that is well linked to this case. So I prefer to, I'm a bit late, so I prefer to pass to the affine space. And here is again the polynomial expanded in at q equal 1. And the corresponding description of the graded functor, D, it's an element, it's an abelian group, a finite abelian group. Here we have a few cases, so it's a coproduct of D raised to the Y, where Y is a subset between in 1D, whose cardinality is K. This is the K. And one example for A2, and evaluate F1N. So we have 0 when k equals 0, because here is 1. Then for k equal 1, z mod n2 to the second power due to this description. Then z mod nz for k equal 2. And finally, empty is k greater or equal to 3. The corresponding affine variety, which works well, it's obviously this one. As I try to? No, it's like the set roots of unit, n roots of unit. It's just, what we simply want to say is that these are n roots of unit, and so that's why we choose V mod n Z here. So the projective space, as I said, is incomplete to the story. But as a matter of functor, graded functor, here is the description, and it's similar in quote, to the one for the affine space, except that now there is an action by the diagonal of D, diagonal action on this set, and this set is again D to the Y, where Y is a subset in a set of cardinality D plus 1, with cardinalities K plus 1. And the good point is that we find that, of course, that was the motivation to give a definition of the graduation for this function in such a way that the zero part now coincide with the set, which was the one that Pitts had for F1. Pitts had this set made by D plus 1 element in this situation, and here is what we have in the grid zero. So in the grid zero, there is the original set that Pitts was able to characterize as a projective geometry over F1, so the set of cardinality D plus 1. And it's compatible, in fact, I mean, there is a compatibility as expected because we made up this construction in order that this formula make a sense, so it was true. Now, the last part, for the last part, for the Chevalier group, there is a little bit of technicality involved, because I remember that when I told you about this theorem of Chevalier, which says for any field the group of the K points decomposes as a disjoint union of these cells, and then there was this element in NW, the cosetter, the representative, which maps to the element in the Y group. So because of this description, there is a little bit of technicality in carrying through the working and the corresponding definition of graded the functor for the Chevalier group. Not too much, because in fact the technical part was already understood by Pitts. We refer to a paper of Pitts, and out of there we were able to make the definition here, which is the good one. But I want to say that, in fact, we had to know the description of the corresponding graded functor for A, for the affine space, obviously, and GM, because they enter in the description of the Chevalier group. So here we have this. We have to introduce. I have to introduce quickly a notion of extended Weyl group. And because it turns out that the Weyl group is an extension of, in order to understand carefully this extension, entering extension. And so in order to understand this extension, I need to introduce this notion of braid group, the braid group for a Coxeter matrix. So remember, we start with a Coxeter matrix out of a root system, this this symmetric matrix. And the definition, actually the description of the Weyl group, is through this Coxeter matrix, if you like. And but there is a group which is above, which is called the braid group of the matrix, which is given, is generated by QI, some abstract generators which satisfy these relations, and the MI are again the entries in the matrix. And then one, of course, the definition itself leads to a map, which is a subjection from the braid group to the Weyl group, sending these generators to the corresponding generators of the Weyl group. There is a kernel, and the kernel I call the kernel. Following Pitts' paper, I call the kernel XM. It's a kernel which is, it's, everything here is out of a definition of the matrix. The Coxeter, extended Coxeter group is the quotient of this grid group by the commutators of XM. Okay, so this is the technical moment. Because we want a universal, so this produces a theorem, which is very important, because it says that this extended Coxeter group is the universal extension of the Weyl group by a group which is abelian and free, a free abelian group described here, generated by a set of elements which are in bijective correspondence with a set of reflection in the Weyl group. So finally, the definition of the extended Weyl group, it's out of this construction of the extended Coxeter group. Sorry if I rush. I understand that I'm going too fast, but my time is almost over. And so what the point of teaching was to be able to define an extension of the Y group which is universal. And this is the proposition, an important proposition. So if you have an abelian group and an element in the group whose order is 2, then attached to any element like the epsilon, there is a universal construction which is described, the extension of the Y group by this torus, this Holm LD. And in fact, there is a notion, technical notion, of the extended Y group, which is out of the previous one, of the extended coxet, which I, if you don't mind, I will skip. I want to put the output of this story, which is here. So the main theorem of Titz is that the group extension that we saw here is canonically isomorphic to this one. So why we care about that? Because essentially we want to get the definition of the graded functor for the Chevalier groups, and it's here. So we start with a root system. We have these Chevalier group schemes over Z, and here is the graded, the affine variety over F1, which is made by a functor, covariant functor, graded covariant functor. Now here is a refinement of the category of finite abelian groups, and this two refers to the two that we saw in the construction of Titz. Remember that there was a D and an epsilon such that epsilon square is one here. So the description of the graded functor is made in three pieces, if you like. There is a unipotent part for which we had already the definition in terms of a fine variety over F1. And here is the fact that we have to work with elements in the Y group was the main reason why we had to go through this technical part to deduce the description of the evaluations as natural transformations. So the evaluation and natural transformation are deduced from the corresponding evaluation for the affine varieties plus this En, which is the evaluation associated to this universal construction that Titz did for us. So I think is more or less what I want to say, except that perhaps the best is to put the definition description of the zeta as the very last. So you see, I mean, nothing new, essentially. I don't want to claim any, extremely important conclusion on this page, but simply that we had a polynomial function here for the Chevalier groups. Then the idea is following again Soulet to think of the zeta function à la Weyl and interpret, as Soulet did, the definition of a zeta function over F1, which in this case turns out to have poles. It's a rational function with poles, and the reason, as I said before, the reason for poles is that because we have this in the description of the points, we had this toric part. If we didn't have the toric part, then it would have been a polynomial function. The toric part simplifies somehow the q minus 1, so it might lead to the conclusion, erroneous conclusion, that the zeta is easy. No. I mean, here we have a some number of poles which depends on the presence of the toric part. So it's a rational function, a little bit more complicated than GM, so for which we have S minus 1 divided by S as a zeta over F1. And it's a rational function because out of A1 we take away one point, so for A1 would be S minus 1. Take away one point, we remove the point, we get a pole. So here we have a finite number of poles and depends on the contribution of the toric part. So that's it.